Theatre 10:30. Is your mind at rest? Good. Tonight, we at CBC Halifax invite you to explore with us a dark and gothic tale by E.T. A. Hoffman, retold for radio by Gavin Douglas. This evening's story recalls that childhood dread, the Sandman. I do hope you enjoy it.
My dearest Clara, how long has it been since I have written? Weeks? Months? I have been imagining that you think me dead or lost in dissipation. Oh, my darling, better that I were. Forebodings lie over me like the shadows of black storm clouds on the ground. I am here to study physics, but it is the devil who will complete my education. I will graduate into the fiery pit. If you were only here, you might judge for yourself. But what I write to you will make you think me mad and a seer of ghosts. Shall I tell you the frightful thing that happened to me? Do you know what mortal effects I am trying in vain to shake off? My dear, on the 20th of October last, at 12 o'clock noon, a barometer seller came into my room and offered me his wares. I can hear you laughing now. What childish nonsense. Did the barometers all predict a hurricane? Yes, they did, in a way. I have told you very little of my childhood, save that my father died. Unfortunately. It is time you knew the rest. I have told you that my father was a wonderful storyteller. Around his study table after dinner, my mother, my sisters, and I would be transported into worlds of fantasy and delight, greater, I swear, than other children ever knew. But on a few nights in the year, most often in the stormy autumn or the dead of winter, he would not speak. Silently, picture books in our hands, we would sit and watch him, mute and stiff in his armchair, growing almost invisible in tobacco smoke, like some dour spirit of the fog. On such nights, my mother was restless and dejected, and we waited in a gloomy apprehension until the clock struck 9. As the clock struck, my mother would tell us, "Off to bed, children. Time for bed. The Sandman is coming." And as we scattered to our bedrooms, more in fear than in obedience, we did hear someone clumping through the front hall with a slow and heavy step. I remember asking mother who the naughty Sandman was who drove us from papa. "Why," she said, "the Sandman isn't a man at all. It only means you're sleepy now and must go off to bed." In my childish mind, I didn't believe her. Hadn't I heard his footsteps coming up the stairs? I asked old gardeners, nurses, people in the streets. Oh, How they did delight to frighten children.
The Sandman, my dear, comes to bad children when they won't go to bed. Sand, handfuls of sand he throws into their eyes, so that they pop all bloody out of their heads. Then the Sandman sweeps the eyes up into his sack and carries them to the Half Moon as food for his children. His children sit there in a nest with crooked beaks like owls, with which they gobble up the eyes of human children who've been naughty.
As the years passed and I became older, I outgrew old wives' tales of the Sandman's children and their dreadful nest. But every now and then, year after year, heavy steps would echo through the hallway, and the door of my father's study would be violently torn open. The Sandman's dealings with my father took hold of my imagination and would not let it go. I became obsessed with the supernatural and fantastic, with gruesome tales of hobgoblins, witches, Tom Thumbs, and the like. At last, one night, when the gloom of the household foretold of one of the Sandman's visits, I hid behind a curtain in my father's room before the clock struck 9. My mother and sisters hurried away down the corridor, and the dreaded familiar steps approached. Then there came a sharp step just outside the door, and it clattered open. Summoning all my courage, I peered between the folds of curtain and saw the old lawyer Coppelius. A huge, broad-shouldered man with a fat, shapeless head, a face the color of yellow earth, a twisted, sardonic mouth, and piercing green cat's eyes. He was a constant and hated guest at luncheon in our house, touching, as if by accident, with his huge, repulsive hands, every sweetmeat on the table, ruining them forever in our children's eyes. My father deferred to him as a superior being, at all costs to be humored, at all costs to be endured. This vile Coppelius was the Sandman, no longer a bogey from the nursery, but a living monster who spread gloom and misery wherever he set foot. Above my father's old stove in the corner, there now flickered a blue flame, and strange utensils stood about.
To work! Much to do, and they will be impatient. Feed the flames.
Through the smoke and blue infernal light, I scarcely recognized my father. His gentle, honest features seemed contorted into a mask of agony. Human faces appeared to float in the murk. They stopped my heart when I saw that they had no eyes, only deep black cavities looking from nothing into nothing.
Eyes! Our friends lack eyes and cannot see us. We must have eyes to give them sight.
Overcome by horror, I screamed and fell out of my hiding place onto the floor. When I awakened, my mother told me that I had fainted, that Coppelius and my father were mere amateurs of chemistry, but that the old lawyer was very, very angry, and I must never eavesdrop again. Eavesdrop? I never dared to step into the room thereafter, until that last dreadful night. when Coppelius came again. My father promised that this was the last of old Coppelius's visits, and we were almost joyful when we went to bed. It was the last joy we were to know at home. For just at the hour of midnight, before the clock could sound, the noise of an explosion thundered through the house. My father's body, and we found it through the smoke and shattered glass. I cannot describe to you more than to say that we knew him more from his form than from the remainder of his face. The incident was much talked of, and the authorities searched everywhere for Coppelius. But he had vanished without trace into the night. Oh, Clara, my dearest Clara, the man who came to my room here a few weeks ago, the barometer seller, he has changed his name, his dress, and his profession. But, Clara, it was Coppelius.
Forgive my writing to you on so intimate a matter, but you are my cousin, and the only confidant that poor Nathaniel seems to have. No doubt he's told you all about the diabolical death of his father, and of wicked barometer peddlers who haunt his dreams and such nonsense. I have written to him countless times to try to banish these imagined spectres with a little honest laughter, but he calls me cold, unfeeling, and a stranger to the black abysses of this world. I believe with all my soul that the evils of the world can never touch us unless we give them entry of our own free will. Until we let them become a part of us, they are helpless phantoms, drifting around us, knocking in vain for welcome. Dear Siegmund, I love Nathaniel deeply. Some day I shall be his wife, though 100 Coppeliuses tell us nay. Watch him, guard him, and let me know his mind. Has he resumed his studies? Are his professors sympathetic? I curse the distance that separates us. Let me know everything that you see fit. No, everything. As always, Clara.
My dear Clara, I am delighted that I have better news for you. Nathaniel has come under a good influence, who has done more for him than I could ever hope to. He goes daily for his tutorial to the house of the renowned physicist, Professor Spallanzani, who has convinced him that the poor old barometer seller is not, after all, the devil in disguise. He is a poor mechanic named Giuseppe Coppola, and the professor, who is of course himself Italian, swears that his accent is the purest Piedmontese. You cannot imagine how relieved Nathaniel seems. Spallanzani himself is a most peculiar man. Brilliant, of course, but rather eccentric, as natural philosophers are apt to be. He has a daughter whom he keeps locked up behind a glass door with a green curtain. The curtain was a little parted yesterday as Nathaniel and I came up to our tutorial, and there in a sealed room sat a tall, beautifully proportioned girl in sumptuous clothing, hands folded, motionless. Would you believe it? We watched for a moment or two, and she never moved. We learned afterwards that she is called Olympia, and gossip says she is kept hidden away there because she is an idiot. She was dazzlingly beautiful. Oh, but that expressionless face. Oh, it made my flesh creep. Poor Spallanzani.
My dearest Clara, I have just suffered a most unpleasant experience. I was in my room, gazing out the window and idly wondering about Olympia, old Spallanzani's daughter. Siegmund says he has told you of her. You know that I live opposite the professor's house, and I can often see her dimly through her window, sitting motionlessly, staring into space. She is a most curious phenomenon. I'm sure you would be quite interested. But as I looked, there came a tap at the door.
Come in.
Signor Nathaniel?
I don't want any barometers today. Please, go away.
All right, no barometer. But I have the better thing. Eyes, lovely eyes.
Eyes? Madman, how can you have eyes?
Oh, wait and you see. See, spectacles to put on your nose. Those are my eyes, my lovely eyes. See how so many eyes all dance, wink, and stare at you, eh? See how the beams, the blood-red beams, blaze and intersect and warm your heart. Ah!
Go! Stop! God in heaven, stop!
Oh, nothing there you like. Well, here's a fine little pair of binoculars.
Binoculars.
What the pocket? Does not this perhaps please you?
I beg your pardon. I really don't know what came over me. I thought you were someone else. I was forgetting. Binoculars. Yes, let's see them.
Here you are.
Thank you. Good Lord. How close they bring things.
Yes, that's right. Do. Try them on the street. Across the street.
Olympia.
I beg your pardon.
Olympia. She's more beautiful than I could have imagined. Her eyes are moonlight. They...
What am I saying? How much, old man? How much for the glasses?
Tres zecchine, tre ducats, signor.
There you are. Thank you. You may take the spectacles and go.
Find a pair of glasses, eh?
Yes, yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye, my friend.
What a repulsive man. I suppose he's laughing because he thinks I paid too much for the binoculars.
My dear Clara, I am afraid that I have the most serious news for you. I had better tell you the whole truth, omitting nothing. Last evening, Spallanzani astounded the entire university by giving a great ball at his house, whose star attraction was none other than his secluded daughter, Olympia. Nathaniel and I received invitations, and at the appointed hour, we entered the brilliantly decorated rooms.
Look! Is she not beautiful, Siegmund?
Oh, very. She has one of the most finely modeled faces and figures that I've ever seen. But, Nathaniel, the way she walks. And look at her gestures. Have you ever seen anything so stiff and measured? Oh, I don't like her in spite of her beauty.
You have no soul. None at all. Of course, she is constrained. This is her first social occasion.
Have you noticed that no one is asking her to dance?
Hmm? I have, and I will. I must beg you to excuse me. You're as light as a swallow, Olympia. And they tell me you play the harpsichord magnificently. Magnificently! Why has your father kept you from us so long? Forgive me for shivering. Your hand seems cold. No, cool, like alabaster. Olympia, I have seen you at your window for days, weeks rather. I know it must seem presumptuous, but I love you. Then you do care for me as well? Oh, my darling. You must know I am your father's favorite student. I know he won't oppose the match. See? He's smiling on us from the corner there. I promise to love and cherish you forever. Will you marry me? Oh, my dearest, my darling one. My lovely, my splendid star of love. Now that you have come, my soul will never want for light again.
Olympia? Olympia!
My dearest, must you go? And to think that they laughed at you. I saw them this evening and I heard them saying your singing is too perfect and that you play the harpsichord like a metronome.
What are you standing there looking moonstruck for? Don't you see the rooms are empty and the guests have all departed? The candles are guttering, the flowers are dead. Come on, let's be gone.
Did you see? Oh, Sigmund, did you see how Olympia danced?
Oh, in heaven's name, will you please tell me how an intelligent fellow like you can possibly have fallen for that waxen-faced wooden doll? Have you forgotten you are engaged to Clara?
I forgive you, Sigmund, for you are Clara's cousin and my friend. Thank the fates you are insensible to Olympia's beauty, for if we were rivals, one of us would die a violent death.
Oh, good God, Nathaniel. I concede her beauty, but her eyes, man, her eyes. They're completely devoid of life, almost of vision. Oh, she's uncanny. I swear she's only acting the part of a living being. I don't want anything to do with her.
Let go! Go! Villain! Did I give everything I had for that?
Well, that wasn't our wager. I made the eyes.
And I the clockwork.
To hell with you and your clockwork, you wretched mechanic. Satan, let go.
A cheat.
Please.
What is it?
What on earth's the matter?
Professor. Professor. Valentani, what's wrong?
My dearest Clara, I do not ask you to believe what we saw. Professor Spallanzani and the peddler Coppola held Olympia between them, dragging at her and pulling her apart. Springs and cogs fell from her, littering the floor. And where her eyes had been a few moments earlier were the hollow sockets of a wooden door.
Olympia! Nathaniel, you fool. What are you standing there for? After him. After Coppola. He has my doll, my best automaton. 20 years of work and he's run off with it. The mechanism, the walk, the power of speech are mine. The eyes he stole from you. Rogue. Villain. After him. He has your eyes.
Monster. I sat at your feet. I worshipped your learning, and now you... The eyes... Coppelius! Oh, God! Then Coppola is Coppelius, and I am lost! Spin! Spin, wooden tongue! Eyes flare and burn! Coppelius has escaped. But I can kill you.
Daniel! Oh, God's sakes, no! No! Help! Help! Batman! Help!
My dearest Siegmund, my mother will by now have conveyed to you the tragic news. Our poor Nathaniel seemed much better in those last few weeks, until yesterday. We had been walking and climbed the great tower of the marketplace to see the sun go down. We stood arm in arm on the topmost gallery, and I pointed out an odd illusion of the altitude. a strangely shaped grey bush that seemed to be striding towards us over the ground. Seizing an old pair of quaint binoculars that he found by chance in his pocket, Nathaniel looked at the moving bush and plunged over the side. When I had fled down from the tower, there remained nothing remarkable upon the ground save his poor, crushed body. But there were no binoculars. My dear Siegmund, in spite of all my reason, and in spite of all his will, I believe the Sandman came for him at last. I hope, oh God, I pray the part about his children on the moon is true as well.
T.A. Hoffman's story, The Sandman, was our story tonight on Theater 1030. David Renton played Nathaniel. Faith Ward was heard as Clara. Bruce Armstrong played Siegmund. And Joseph Rutten, Professor Spallanzani. Dr. Coppelius was played by Gavin Douglas, who adapted the work for this medium. Sound effects, Carl Scott and Wayne Mackey. Technical operation, Bud Tabor. Produced for Theatre 1030 by Peter Donkin.